2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. And what a Friday, huh? I mean, it's going to be a great weekend. It's finally, hot weather is going to be here right in through the middle of next week. We do know that we're expecting some rain either this evening or maybe overnight. So don't be too concerned if it clouds up a little bit as we go through the rest of the day. But it has been absolutely fantastic. Great weather and a great program for you today. We're going to be talking a little bit about harness racing later on. Aaron Merriman, who is a harness race driver, we're going to be talking down at the Meadows. We're going to be talking about that because tomorrow is the day for the Belmont Stakes. Now, the Belmont, of course, is thoroughbred horse racing. I think they call that flat racing. The Meadows is harness racing, but I believe they do a pretty big deal down at the Meadows because of the Belmont. I think they tie it all together. So we'll talk with Aaron Merriman a little bit later on the program. But first, a guest that we've had on a couple of times. I first met Bob Tattern, I don't know when, but as I was telling you earlier in the week, promoting the fact that he was going to be with us, it's just a fun time. He is a man of a thousand stories, which would be good enough, but he's just heck of a fun guy to talk to. Bob Tattern, welcome. Nice to see you again. Thank Great to you. Have you back in
Thank
Butler.
You. Is my mic? There we go.
How's that? A little bit better?
Actually, 2,264 stories that I have written, which are all true. Now, they're only a minute long, so it's not like I've written 2,000 books, but we have had a lot of fun here on the program. I always enjoy coming up to Butler and then playing Lewis and Clark, trying to find your building. But anyway.
By the way, his stories are short, but he has published two books, two compilations, two anthologies, collections of these stories. Right? Two books, Bob?
Two books, yeah. Right. Yeah. Volumes one and two.
Mm-hmm. So. And actually, we're going to give some of them away here on the program, as we did the last time we were able to visit with Bob. So get your thinking cap on. We'll be giving you, in just a couple of minutes here, we'll be giving you some sports trivia questions to mull over.
And the fact that it's Father's Day, you know. Here's a last-minute gift.
That's right.
You know?
You have 1 week to get a gift for Dad. Here's something you can tuck in
for
Father's Day. Absolutely. Well, that's a good thought, Bob. Good thought.
Yeah.
You are legendary in the broadcast journalism field. You've been doing sports broadcasts, play-by-play, for decades here in Western Pennsylvania.
August 1st, I will have 58 years behind the mic.
Wow.
58. And I've enjoyed every one of them. You know what they say? If you do something that you love to do, you don't have a job.
Yeah.
You know, you're not working. This is pleasure. So I really have enjoyed it. I have been the voice of a particular book that a ministry is using in Southeast Asia, Southeast Asian Prayer Center.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done in English because I don't know the Southeast Asian lingo. But the minister, Mr. Geppert, or Pastor Geppert, uses the book to train whatever Americans are there in the ministry of Jesus Christ.
Mm.
So I had the pleasure of doing that, which I volunteered to do. And down through the years, I have done play-by-play of more than 4,000 high school football, basketball, hockey, soccer, and one bocce game. And one bocce game, which had nothing to do with high school, by the way. So it's been a trip. And before you know it, you wake up one morning, you're 77 years old, and you're saying to yourself, my gosh, where did the time go? But I do want to give away some books. I brought a bunch of Volume 1 and Volume 2. So if you get a trivia question correct. Now, we're going to do this the same way we did last time?
Yeah.
Where we'll ask the question and then they call, or do you want to have them call first?
No, we'll ask the question and people can call in, and we will, because we don't give out contact information over the air, if you get the right answer, we'll have you stay on the line, and our producer, Pat Parker, in the control room there will... We'll take your name and contact information, and we'll be able to give you information about how you can pick up your book. So we'll do that. I did want to take just a second here because I knew that you had done at least some high school hockey. We're in the midst of Penguin playoff season. Seems like it's been forever, 2 months. Playoffs are too long, don't you think? Way, way too long.
Well, if you're in each of the four series, as is Pittsburgh and Nashville, if each series went the full seven games, you're looking at another 28. Mm-hmm. The regular season, I believe, is 82 games.
Well, they qualified too many teams for the playoffs. Well, that's the problem. You've got to go through four rounds of best of seven. And when did the Penguins finish the regular season? April 9th, April 10th? It's 2 months.
They've been playing. I hear you.
Well, anyway, I wanted to ask you because you've done. I know you've done tremendous amounts of basketball and football. Would hockey be the hardest?
It is.
I would think that would be the hardest play-by-play.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And the thing is, hockey, the skaters are on the ice for shifts of 30 to 45 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And before I know it, they're jumping over. Here comes three more. So the way we started out, we listed them numerically. Then we got smart and figured out who's on their lines. So we put them in threes for the right and left wing in the center, and then the two defensemen. And we put them in groups. So if you knew that 13 was on the ice or whatever number, the other two guys would be right with
them.
So,
be there.
You know,
yeah.
There it is.
Well, that's the way the Penguins operate, but Mike Sullivan shifts that around a great deal. So, of course, whenever you're doing it at the NHL level, you've got spotters electronic gear and all that kind of stuff. Sometimes when you're doing high school sports, you're left to your own skills in many cases with a spotter or a helper or something like that.
I mentioned that I've been doing this for, pretty close to 58 years. I can remember going to Forbes Field on the evening of a game, batting practice time, etc., sitting in the dugout with Danny Murtaugh, Bob Friend, and a few of the other players, getting interviews with a tape recorder that was about 14, 15 inches wide, about maybe 10 inches tall, and it ran by battery, and the way you charged it was one of the take-up reels had something that pulled out, and you cranked it, and it gave you 8 minutes. Okay?
And it probably weighed a ton.
Oh, it did. Now, turn the clock ahead to, I believe the year was 2001. I did a playoff game for high school basketball, a state championship game at Hershey. And I did the game on a cell phone.
Yeah.
It weighed, 6 ounces, whatever they are?
Yeah, it's amazing. I have not done much play-by-play at all, but I'm familiar with the equipment. And when I started, we used what was called a MARTI unit, kind of a mini transmitter.
Yeah.
But now you use a cell phone. That's
amazing.
It's pretty amazing stuff. Have you done most of your work with the same high school, or just a couple of them, or have you moved around?
The AK Valley, as we know it, which would probably be, before the merger started, we had both East Deer and West Deer.
Mm-hmm.
We had New Kensington. We had Arnold.
Harbrack?
We had Harbrack. We had Tarentum. We had Verona and Oakmont. And all those schools have merged. And the only ones who have not, Freeport, mm-hmm. Springdale, and Plum.
Wow.
So it literally cut down the amount of schools. But we do 7 to 8 schools on a rotating basis. We try to get as many So, and thank God for sponsors, because without that...
And you're on cable TV or radio or both?
No, cable. As it is right now, cable. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I have a separate sports show on another station out of the area, mm-hmm. which is also syndicated. And there's a station in Latrobe that picks it up on a Saturday morning. So, and it's all on sports history, which is what I do, which is what I love to do, I should say. But anytime you're ready, I've got loads of stuff. And I want to give away the fact that it's Father's Day weekend coming up. It's not tomorrow.
It's next Sunday.
It's a week ago.
Yeah, the third Sunday in June.
Right. So these people have time. The fact that we're coming up on Father's Day. If you guess wrong, can I give them at least one clue, maybe turn?
Absolutely.
I want to give the books
away. We want to give away books.
I'm feeling kind-hearted today.
Okay, get your thinking caps on here. And if past history is any clue, you're going to have your thinking cap on, because Bob has some pretty great trivia questions. So let's go. Sometimes we'll have two or three going at the same time, but start her off here, Bob.
Okay.
Todd.
I'm going to give the folks one that I teased you with when I came in. Let's go back to 1941. And Joe DiMaggio is flirting with a consecutive game hitting streak. And toward the end of that streak, the Yankees go to Cleveland. And this is where the streak ended. However, a Pittsburgh food company offered Joe DiMaggio a handsome chunk of money, $10,000 then. Today, if you look at the inflation calendar, $166,000.
Wow.
So it's 16 times as, well.
Would have been a nice chunk of change. Yeah.
So anyway, but I want to throw that one out first. Name the Pittsburgh-based food company that made Joe DiMaggio that offer in 1941. That company still exists today.
Phone number is 283-2525 if you know the answer. Oh, my goodness, we have a couple of calls already. We got some smart people out there. Let's see. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Would that happen to be Heinz?
You know your baseball, don't you? Let me. Heinz is correct, by the way. Caller, let me ask you a little bit. You must know then what Joe DiMaggio's all-time record consecutive game hitting streak was, correct?
Yeah, I think it was 51.
No,
you were close.
56.
You were close.
56.
56.
Okay, here was the deal. I'll let Bob tell the story. If you know Heinz, then you're going to know.
So there's Joe DiMaggio is sitting at 56 consecutive games. H.J. Heinz in Pittsburgh says, whoa, this guy gets 57. Can you imagine how we can cash in on this?
57 varieties of Heinz.
So they call Joe and they make him the offer, and all he needed to do was to get that 57th hit, take a picture with the Heinz logo of 57,
mm-hmm.
and they would circulate it. And a third baseman for the Cleveland Indians by the name of Kenny Keltner, DiMaggio had gone hitless. It's now maybe the top of the ninth, top of the eighth, whatever, late in the game. It's DiMaggio's last at-bat. And Keltner makes a spectacular play at third base to rob him of a hit. And as he is showering, the police come into the Cleveland locker room and say they wanted to talk with Mr. Keltner. Cleveland is a large Italian-based populated area. They were rooting for DiMaggio to continue. They didn't care if Cleveland won or lost. So they gave Keltner a police escort home.
Wow.
So that's what happened with that.
Caller, here's what I want you to do. Stay on the line, because our producer, Pat Parker, is going to pick up here. He's going to get your name and so on, and we'll tell you how you can get your book, okay?
Hey, Dave, can I interject that I won the book the last time he was on?
Well, that's fine. You can give
That was the one about what pirate was hit with by most pitches.
Okay, now, I don't recall if you have volume 1 or 2. So when you come here to pick up the book, make sure you get the other one.
Get the one you don't have, okay?
Yeah, okay.
All right. Listen,
all right,
stay on the line. Nice to talk
to you
again.
Thank you. It was a good book.
Thanks. Yeah, well, there's an unsolicited bit of testimony for you there, Bob. Yeah. Pat, did you? Yeah, Pat's got the name there. We just don't want to give out personal contact information over the air. That's not a wise thing to do. Okay, you got another question for us?
The very first outdoor ice hockey game was played where? Now, I need a venue. It was not in a big city. So I need a caller to come in and say it was played at a playground in Brooklyn, or it was played at a barn in Iowa somewhere, whatever, near a barn.
Now, would this be a professional hockey game?
Yeah. Okay. Detroit and I believe it was Chicago.
So those were two of the original National Hockey League teams.
Right. Yeah. Detroit and Chicago played this very first National Hockey League outdoor game in 1954. And I want to know if they know anything at all, and I know we have computers. I don't care if they look on a search engine to get this answer, but it is such a unique story. When I stumbled on this, I couldn't believe it because they just started playing the outdoor games a few years back.
I thought that's the first time they ever did it.
Well, in college, they've been doing it for a while because they would get the kids, as an example, for the Michigan State outdoor hockey game, two colleges, a paid attendance, 104,173.
Wow.
So
that had to be at Michigan Stadium because that's about the capacity of that place.
Yeah.
The big house, they call it.
Yeah. So, you know, the NHL takes a look at this and says, you know, why can't we cash in? But the very first outdoor game, and it is an interest. Just give me a general thing like a playground, a street that they flooded over with water, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me where or on what kind of because it was not in a major city. It was not in a major city.
Our phone number is 283-2525. We'll let you cipher on that one for a while. And we're
gonna do another one.
Sure, we've got another question here in just a minute. 283-2525 is the number. We're chatting for folks who joining us a little bit late today. That happens, especially here during the noon hour, because people are on the road, sometimes listening to the radio in the car. Dave Mullarkey is my name. Bob Tattern is our guest, a legendary voice in sports broadcasting here in western Pennsylvania. And he's also the author of two, and I don't want to call them, because they're not sports trivia books. They're human interest story books.
Odd and unusual things that have happened. I don't want to say zany, crazy, or weird, but sometimes, you know, they are.
Mm-hmm.
But
are your books for sale someplace?
On my website, and that's one thing I wanted to get across today for those who do not win and maybe would like to order a book for Father's Day or just for themselves,
mm-hmm.
Go to my website, which is DoubleDribbleBob.com. DoubleDribbleBob.com. And in the upper left-hand corner, there's an area that is dedicated to the two books, and it'll tell you how to get them.
We may have someone who thinks they have an answer to the hockey question. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Well, good afternoon, guys. I always enjoy when Bob's on, and his knowledge and the things he brings up are, like he said, they're fascinating, some of them. And I think this is one about this hockey game because I think I read somewhere that Detroit played a prisoner someplace like
you
that.
You got it. You got
it. Is that right?
And wow. Dave's eyes just opened wide.
I would never have guessed that in a million years.
A prison. Let me see if I have it identified as to... Yes. Marquette Branch Prison. Maximum security.
Wow.
So the only audience were killers, robbers, And wife beaters, okay?
Or what? Maximum security prison, yeah.
A maximum security prison in Indiana called Marquette. And what they did was to, you know, flood the surface and let's see what happens. Hmm. So there weren't too many people there, but there were, as I said, they were all prisoners. The audience, what? I have it written down, the audience was a mix of thieves, kidnappers, and murderers.
Well, didn't they play? I don't know that they played another NHL team. I think they may have played like a prisoner team or something for that.
Well, what they did was to come back. One of the two teams came back and did play a prison team. But for that particular day, Chicago and Detroit, you know, both members of the NHL played in that played the game. Whether it was an exhibition or real, I don't know. If I were a season ticket holder, I would be a little bit upset that my team chose to take one of their home games to a prison.
Now, you said this was in the 40s?
No, 1954. 54.
Wow.
Well, you know, having watched a lot of the Stanley Cup playoff action, it looks like some of the behavior on the ice could result in some of those guys ending up in prison.
That's great.
I also think having heard this story, it almost sounds like that would be a potential movie.
True. Yeah.
Prison team playing the National Hockey League guys.
Like, well, that one they made in Johnstown.
The Longest Yard.
Well, that's with Burt Reynolds. Yeah. But there was a hockey movie that was made in Johnstown. It was
with Paul Newman.
Paul Newman. It was Slapshot was the name
that's
of it.
That's it. Yeah. You got it.
Hey, great call. Thanks, caller. Stay on the line now because Pat will get your name and contact information so you can get yourself one of Bob Tattern's books.
And I have a postscript to one of his comments.
Yeah.
I know how to beat ISIS. Just turn the war over to the National Hockey League and they'll wipe them out.
Could be. The outdoor games, I don't know. I look at them today, Bob. Maybe it's just me. It just seems to me to be such a tremendous waste of money. And look at all that. You know, they got to set up that rink. They got to bring all that refrigeration equipment in.
They have money to burn.
Well, give that money to charity, for goodness sakes.
I agree.
You know, you got these huge arenas that, in most cases, the taxpayers helped to build to begin with.
I read about a pro basketball player, can't think of his name, spent on July 4th $10,000 on fireworks.
Wow.
Just, you know, to show off in the neighborhood. $10,000? Hmm. Give it to somebody who's starving, for Pete's sakes.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, anyway, I got to tell you a story, and we'll get the next question here. This is a story about my dad, who just amazed me several years ago. And I forget how it came up. Maybe the Penguins win the playoffs. I don't know. But somebody in the family, we were at the dinner table, somebody said, well, you know, the Pittsburgh had a minor hockey league team, too.
And the Hornets.
Hornets, Pittsburgh Hornets. And so the question became, where did they play before the Civic Arena was built? And, well, the answer is Duquesne Gardens. Okay?
Right, right.
But then my dad chimes in because I said, where was that? Where was Duquesne Gardens? I can tell you. He says, I went to a hockey game there. And I couldn't believe it, you know?
Yeah.
And this would have been when my dad was a kid. You know?
I'll tell you what. I went. My dad would take me down with a friend of his back in the let's say early to mid 50s, and that's how I got started loving hockey. Was to, you know, to watch these, and I can't tell you one name of any star on that team, but
Duquesne Gardens was in Oakland. It was not very far from St. Paul's Cathedral and the Hines Chapel, and that whole area was on I always get Fifth and Forbes mixed up, but that's where it was anyway.
Here's one that I didn't know of or was privy to until just recently. The question is, what Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver who was traded to Dallas back in the mid-60s, recorded a song which was called Baby Back in the Old Days, and it was number one on one of the Texas radio station's charts. And here is a guy traded from Pittsburgh to Dallas. And I think he only played 1 year there and retired. But he was a longtime Steeler as a receiver. And everybody loved this guy. So that's one. Throw another one up.
That'll be a tough one for me, yeah. Because that was in the 50s,
well,
you say?
His last name is the same as a popular soap. I don't know if that helps you out or not.
283-2525 is the number. We're anxious to give away more of Bob Tattern's books. 283-2525. You have another question for us?
Yes. What pitcher holds the Major League Baseball record of hitting a home run in the most consecutive games?
Wow.
So, and I'll give you the number. It's four. A pitcher, a starter would have to be, because a reliever's only in for a couple of innings.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
This is a starter, and this is not ancient. This is reasonably within the last, let's say, late 60s, 70s, thereabouts.
He hit a home run in four straight games.
Four straight games in which he started.
Mm. Oh, yeah, obviously.
And that's the record. So you want to win a book? Give me an answer to that one. Or the Steelers wide receiver whose last name is the same as a very popular soap.
Let's go to the phones. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn. Do you have an answer for us?
Yeah. What was that Steelers name? I think it was Swan.
No.
Did you say Swan?
Yeah, Lynn Swan.
Yeah.
No, this. Uh-huh. I'm saying this one goes back. He was traded in the, where I have it here, I have a note, mid-60s. So he had been with the Steelers maybe late 50s through the mid-60s and spent maybe his last year, no more than two, in Dallas. And when he gets there, this guy's got nobody ever tried him out before. He's got a great singing voice, and he comes up with a song called Baby Back in the Old Days. And it was a very popular song on this particular station's charts.
Well, thanks for taking a crack at it anyway, caller. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Hey, call back with another one. We'll let him call back.
Thanks. 283-2525 is our number. Hi, this is Dave. Do you have an answer for us?
Yeah, Buddy Dial.
You are absolutely right.
Wow.
Buddy Dial had a voice, and it may have been a country song. I would think Texas. Okay.
Well, who would have been, was that back in the Bobby Lane days? Would he have been the quarterback whenever Buddy Dial played?
It could have been.
I don't know.
Actually, Bobby Lane, I think, got there. Yeah, it probably would have been. Yeah.
A little bit before my time of following the Steelers. But, wow, caller, that's great.
Okay. Boy.
Hey, have you won a book before?
Yes, I have.
Okay, well, we'll have both the first and volume two here. Just take the book that you don't have, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All righty.
Thank you.
Stay on the line. We'll get your name here. Thanks. 283-2525. It's a little bit before I was following the Steelers. I do know back in those days that the Steelers changed coaches about every year and a half because they were lousy then, quite frankly.
Yeah, and then Chuck Knoll came around and stuck around for
a
while.
And he was lousy the first year.
Yeah, 1-13.
They won one game.
They beat Detroit in the opening game. And that lost 13 in a row.
I didn't know that. I knew they only won one
game. And that's how they got Joe Green. And by the way, his name was not Mean Joe in college. His team in college, which was, they changed their name, by the way, the name of the college.
Mm-hmm.
But their nickname had something to do with the word green. And so they called the entire defensive unit the Mean Green.
Hmm.
And Green, Joe Green, was only part of it. It was not intended for him. It was intended for the whole defensive unit. We are the Mean Green. So when he got to Pittsburgh, it kind of, just tagged along with him.
Wow, good stuff. And good call there, Buddy Dial. The only Steeler, and obviously this was not the answer to your question because it was a quarterback, But Terry Bradshaw recorded some tunes with limited success after he quit playing. Very limited success. Pretty bad, actually.
Did you know he had a brother that played for the Houston, what was the name of the team now?
Oilers?
Yeah, the Houston Oilers. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
May have only played for 1 year, but he was there. He had a brother who played pro football, and he, too, was a quarterback.
Now, the Oilers I do remember because I was I was following the Steelers, and that's when the Steelers Earl were Campbell, starting to get good. Yeah,
Earl Campbell and the coach, Bum Phillips.
Bum Phillips, yeah.
And Bum Phillips, I believe, was a Marine and had quite an interesting military career. But anyway, he came back, started out coaching high school. Jumped or had high school before going into the Marines, and then may have gone to college briefly, and then came out, went to Houston. So
that's one of those teams, and I love these trivia questions. The Houston Oilers moved; they abandoned Houston and the Astrodome, and they are now the Tennessee Titans.
We have
they
a kid
to Tennessee.
Yeah, we have a kid that played for. And you brought this up in the name of the high school, Harbrack, Cookie Gilchrist.
I never knew that's where he went to high school.
Yes, he went to Harbrack, and he went from there, not to college, but straight to the NFL, to Buffalo. Now, Buffalo at the time was AFL.
Mm. Oh, yeah, the old American Football League. Yeah.
And Gilchrist, and I'm trying to remember how many others, from Buffalo, and I don't have the note here. This is one of my own for memory. How many other kids or team members that he were with him, they went to New Orleans for the All-Star Game. Now, this was mid-60s. America was a lot different regarding, you know, blacks and whites
race
separation. So they get down there to practice. They can't get a cab. Nobody wants to pick up an African-American on the street corner.
Wow.
They go into a restaurant, whites only. They get a hold of the commissioner and said, we cannot get service here. Guess what they did with the All-Star game? They took it to Houston.
Mm.
And the people in New Orleans were trying like crazy to get an NFL franchise, which they did not too many years in the future, but that could have been a quicker happening had they behaved themselves. The Civil Rights Act had been passed, but, you know, whites only, so.
We're anxious to give away more of Bob's books. Do you have any more questions for us, Bob?
Let's do this one here.
Let me take a break here because I got to get some messages in, but we'll pass on some more trivia questions for you. And I'll be learning a lot more, too, as I always do whenever we visit with Bob. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. Nice to have you along with us here today, and we'll be back after these words.
There's no denying we enjoy dining out, and we love to cut a rug on occasion as well. It's my pleasure to announce that you can put that dining and dancing together at Tanglewood every second Saturday of the month. A buffet dinner prepared by Chef George starts at 6:30, dancing from 7:30 till 10:30, just $16 per person. Come for just the dance and pay only $8. As always, it's BYOB. Break out your dancing shoes and work up an appetite for Tanglewood's dinner dance every second Saturday of the month. Call 287-0021 for reservations. I was just 49 when I started getting mail from AARP. AARP? Shoot, I was just getting started in life. Then I hit my 60s and retirement was on my mind. The big question was, did I prepare? What about healthcare? Are my finances in order? Not just for my wife and me, but for the kids and grandkids. I got the answers I needed from attorney Michael Pater, specializing in elder law, long-term care, Medicaid, and wills and estate planning, is attorney Michael Pater in the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center. Phone 287-7724.
Welcome back, friends. We're talking with Bob Tattern here today. Bob is a legendary broadcaster here in Western Pennsylvania, doing high school sports for decades, really. And he's also collected over the years a lot of wonderful stories. Some of them are unusual. Some of them are unbelievable. Some of them are funny. But he's collected them in now. He has two books, Volume 1, Volume 2. And we're giving them away here on the program today for correct answers to sports trivia questions.
Okay. You wanted me to give another one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There is an event which occurs once a year. It is called the Solstice Baseball Game. It only is played once a year. And I want you, the listener, to tell me, or Dave and I, in which U.S. state is that annual baseball game played? It's called Solstice, S-O-L-S-T-I-C-E.
283-2525. One of the trivia questions. I guess that's the only one we have going right now, isn't it? We have
answers for all the other ones? No, I've got the one about the Major League record pitcher that hit four home runs in a game. Another one I can throw out.
Hit a home run in four consecutive games.
Right. What did I say?
You said four home runs in one game.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Let me get to the phones here. 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Do you have an answer to one of our questions?
I'm going to take a wild guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say Iowa.
For the Solstice game?
Yeah.
You know, that would be a good guess because that's the corn state and there's a lot of sun and heat out there. But, of course, the answer is wrong.
Okay, thanks.
Do you want to?
We're thinking
Kevin Costner movie.
Oh, yes. Field of Dreams, yeah.
Yeah.
Please. I was just having fun there, so don't take that the wrong way.
Can I give him a clue?
Yes. Stay with us. You got a clue coming, okay?
I want to give away the books. As a matter of fact, the gentleman who called before with an incorrect answer, call back. I want to give you a clue to
one. We got another question
here,
for
but
you.
Anyway.
Okay, here's a clue for you, listen.
Okay, this state is not a continental state.
Well, that narrows it down.
You sure do.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to go with Hawaii.
No.
No, we're really narrowing it down now. The key is Solstice game. Which is the first day of summer. Solstice.
All right. Well, I'll give somebody else a chance here.
No, here.
Well, you know what it is now, don't you?
Well, it's going to be Alaska.
Yeah, land of the midnight sun.
Let me tell you about this place. Wherever the field may be, there have been several top major leaguers, including people like Dave Winfield, Tom Seaver, Harold Reynolds, Bill Lee, Terry Francona, Jason Giambi, they've all played in that particular game.
Wow.
And it is played at midnight, and no lights are needed because the sun is out in full.
That's right. Land of the midnight sun and on the first day of
summer. Oh, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, all those major leaguers that have played in that game.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Caller, stay on the line. We want to give you a book, okay? You've been a good sport.
And
thanks.
For the gentleman who did come up with an incorrect answer, please call back. I've got a ton of books that I want to give away. So.
Okay, well, as soon as we
need another one out here, right?
Yeah, and as soon as Pat gets the name of that winner there, we'll go back to the phones. We're looking for the name of the Major League pitcher who hit a home run in four consecutive games. He was a starter, so it would have been four consecutive games for him. Would have been over a span of a couple of weeks.
Let me throw out one clue.
Okay.
He had a brother who came very close to tying a record held by Ted Williams, and he stood a chance of even breaking that record.
Mm.
So he had a brother and a very popular name, a Hall of Famer. His brother is a Hall of Famer.
Caller, this is Dave. Do you think you have an answer to our questions?
Hi, Dave. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. Actually, before I want to guess on the pitcher, but before the clue, I would have gotten the Alaska. That's just... I'm going to guess. I had a guess in mind, and The brother clue, I'm going to tweak that guess, and I'm going to say Ken Brett.
You are absolutely correct.
Wow.
Oh, good.
I remember Ken Brett. I remember Ken Brett.
Yeah. He died tragically in, I don't recall the year, but he had cancer and passed away. I think he was like 53, 55, 57, somewhere in there.
Didn't he even play for the Pirates once?
Yes, he did.
I thought so for a while.
I was thinking that, too, short period of time.
Yeah,
And he is also the youngest pitcher to perform in a World Series game, played for the Red Sox, and they had to get permission because something happened with the roster, and one guy goes down, and they said, look, he's only 19. So they waived the rule, and they bring Brett in, and he pitched.
Hmm.
And Ken Brett is the youngest pitcher ever in a World Series game.
I would not have gotten that caller. I couldn't think of a name. But as soon as you said Ken Brett, then I remembered. Because when he played for the Pirates, even though it wasn't very long, sometimes he would pinch hit. And that was just astonishing that you would bring a pitcher in to pinch hit. Remember that?
Yeah. Wasn't he a left-handed hitter, I believe?
Don't remember.
Got me on that.
I don't remember.
Well, anyway,
the hint, I was going to guess Babe Ruth, but the hint certainly...
He had a brother.
Babe Ruth would have been a good guess because he started out as a pitcher.
He sure did.
He was a home run hitter. Yeah.
You know, he won 95 games as a pitcher, which is a chunk.
Yeah.
He won 95 games as a pitcher until he started hitting home runs. So what are we wasting him here for?
Too valuable.
Stay on the line. We'll get your name and make sure you get a book, okay?
Thank you. Enjoying the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's good.
Got to get another one out.
Okay.
Okay. This is a Hall of Famer. Who holds the National League record of playing in the most consecutive games from the start of a career? So from whenever you start your career, you know, normally, particularly with a rookie, they trade you off and they platoon you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this guy, wow, I figured it out. It was over, I can't do the math now. It had to be three seasons or better that he was never taken out. Hall of Famer, National League, who is he? And I'll give you a clue after we get the guy on the phone or gal. We haven't had any female callers today. I remember having those before.
We have.
So,
phone number is 283-2525, 283-2525. You always get my brain going, Bob.
See, Dave doesn't know the answers to
any
of these. I'm sitting on the opposite side of the table. And there's this thing in front of us that even if he wanted a peek, he'd have to be Superman.
I'm being honest with you, I do not have the answers. Here's a caller that may have an answer for us, though. Hi, this is Dave. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'll try Ricky Henderson.
For which one? Do we have two out or just one?
Yeah, we're looking for the pitcher who hit home runs in four straight
games.
Oh,
we got that one. That was Ken.
That was Ken Brett. Did you say Ricky Henderson?
Yeah.
Okay, you're incorrect, but let me give you a clue. And I don't know your age, and I don't want to. I'm just trying to pick out an era where you might know. His favorite phrase, let's play two.
Oh, I know the answer to that one now. I know that one.
Let's play what?
Play two. In other words, he loved baseball so much. When he'd see somebody, he'd say, well, let's play two. In other words, a doubleheader.
Doubleheader, yeah.
He played, let me give you another one, another clue. He played for the Cubs.
Not ringing a bell for you?
He played
shortstop. He played shortstop.
I guess you don't have an answer, huh? Is she still there? I don't know.
Are you still there, ma'am?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, do you want to, if I told you his first name was Ernie, would that help?
Guess not. He moved from later in his career. I think she left us there. Later in his career, he moved to first base. Didn't he play first base at the end of his career?
Yeah. But, never, ever played in a World Series.
Wow, didn't know that. Yeah. I bet this caller knows the answer here. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, it's Ernie Banks.
It's Ernie Banks.
Did you know that before all the clues?
No.
Okay.
Didn't he?
Once he said shortstop.
And didn't he have a nickname of Bingo? Am I dreaming somewhere?
Could be. I really don't know.
That may be something I just dreamed up. I'm not sure. I tell you how I knew the Let's Play too. Bob Prince told that story.
Yeah.
Whenever the Pirates would play the Cubs, he would always tell that story.
One story Bob Prince told me personally, and of course, it was on the air. I mean, he let it be well known. He was in St. Louis. This is when Dick Stewart was playing first base for Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Prince had a room on the third floor. Just outside the hotel was a swimming pool. And Dick Stewart bet him $20 that Prince could not land in the pool if he leaped from the ledge of his third floor window. And Prince said to me, Tattern, would you believe he never paid off?
Prince did it.
He did it. He jumped from the third floor. Somebody who was in the pool said that he just made it by about 6 inches. He could have been killed.
Wow.
But he jumped, and it was the Chase Hotel. I don't know if blueprints are around or an aerial shot that would show where that swimming pool is, but it should. They don't move swimming pools generally. So, but anyway, thank you for your call.
Caller, stay on the line. We'll get your name and make sure you get a book, okay?
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. No,
so that takes care of that. We've got to get a couple out there.
Ernie Bingo Banks. Yeah.
Okay.
Do we have any questions out right now, Bob?
No, we don't have any.
Okay.
Okay. I got a good one about a... Unless you got a...
I'm not sure. We have a caller here?
Okay. Can I get your...
Okay. There we go.
Okay.
That was getting the name.
The San Francisco Giants. The San Francisco Giants went out of their way... Pardon me. The San Francisco Giants went out of their way to make a Pittsburgh Pirate pitcher feel welcome when the Pirates came to town to play there. And the reason is some of the Giants hit him like they owned him. A very popular Pirate pitcher of his day, I'll tell you this. The guy that really tagged him was Willie McCovey. He would send a limo to the airport. when the plane landed, everybody but he, would ride the bus to the hotel. But Willie McCovey sent a limo. He wanted to make sure that nothing would happen to this particular pitcher.
Playing mind games with him. Well, let's see. I do not know the answer, but first of all, it had to be in the 60s or 70s because the Giants were still in New York prior to that, and McCovey was retired after that.
And,
see if we have any answers. 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. You want to take a shot?
Yeah, Bob Friend?
No. Let's talk former pirate turned announcer.
Turned announcer?
Yep.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Vernon Law?
No. Keep trying.
No. Turned a time. Did he announce for the Pirates?
He pitched for the Pirates.
But announced for somebody else?
Nellie Browse? No.
Nellie King is not it either. That only leaves one more.
my guess would have been Nellie Browse.
Browse, that's what I said.
Yeah, no. Well, okay. It is. Do you want me to give you the answer? Now, I'll give you another shot at another one because we've only given away, I think, four books, maybe five.
Well, something happened. I called in about the Ernie Banks, and it hung up.
Oh, well, did you get the right answer?
Yeah, and I don't know what happened, but it hung up on me.
Well, then we'll just stay where you are. We'll make sure that you get your we get your name and you get your book. Okay.
But he doesn't get this one then.
No.
Yeah. No, that's fine.
Okay.
I'll hang on.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Sure.
So, okay. Boy, that's an easy book to get now. Former Pirate pitcher, now an announcer, was treated to limo rides from the San Francisco airport to the Pirates Hotel by Willie McCovey because he wanted to make sure this pitcher didn't suffer a scratch before the game.
283-2525 is the number if you know that one. Maybe this is more recent than I would have realized. I saw Willie McCovey play, so that's why I guess it's not all that long ago. 283-2525 is the number. And, oh, really?
Yeah.
Bob just showed me the answer. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Do you know the answer?
I don't know. Is it Bob Walk?
No. You know what? There's one I didn't think about, but there's another one out there. In fact,
is he still announcing?
Yes, but he's only doing home games.
Oh, Nelly, or what's his name?
Old what's his name? I remember that guy.
Steve Blass.
You got it.
You got it. Hey, stay on the line. We're going to give you a book, okay?
Okay, thanks.
Sure. Well, thank you. Uh-huh. You just stay there now. We'll get your name.
I think that's the only one that I had out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's okay because we have to take a quick break here anyway. 283-2525 is the number. Bob's going to be here for a little while longer. One of our sponsors on the program today is Miller Shoes. Miller Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. Gosh, it's been a favorite place for folks around here for generations. And I'm not exaggerating, folks. They've been there for 125 years now. 125 years. 215 South Main, downtown. It's summertime, and all of a sudden it feels like it. Do you have sandals? Do you need new sandals? They've got SAS sandals at Miller's Shoes. They're your local headquarters for SAS Shoes, by the way. A lot of folks don't realize that SAS makes sandals, too, in a variety of styles and colors. And you know what? They are just as comfortable as their shoes. I feel like bedroom slippers. And they've got a wide variety of them. Stop in, take a look, try a pair on. You'll know instantly what we're talking about. America's favorite comfort shoes and sandals, SAS, available at Miller's. All your famous brand athletic shoes there, too. Nike, New Balance, Saucony, Rockport, Keds, Skechers, Easy Spirit, Asics, ProPet. Got them all there. One roof. You'll find Hush Puppies. You'll find Foam Treads. You'll find Trotters. You'll find Easy Spirit. Miller's Shoes. And you always get that famous Miller's Fit and the Miller's Price, too, from the Chiprians, of course. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. We will be right back. For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon. Route 8 south of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289. Okay, we're going to speed on here because we'd like to give away a few more books in the time that we have remaining. Bob Tattern, got another question for us.
Okay, got a couple. I'm going to throw them all out so they can take
good.
who scored the very first touchdown in the Super Bowl? Who scored Super Bowl's first touchdown? That's one.
This would be the very first Super Bowl, obviously.
Right.
Okay, good.
What Major League Baseball mascot has been taken to court the most times? Major League Baseball. Where do you hear one of the court cases? Actors John Wayne and Ward Bond both played college football at what California University?
That's a good one.
And here is the only other question I have left. What New York Yankee Hall of Famer was a major stockholder and vice president of the Yoo-Hoo Chocolate Company?
283-2525 is the number if you think you know the answer to any of those questions. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Do you have an answer for us?
Hello? Yes.
Yes, go right ahead.
The one for the John Wayne, was it USC?
You got it.
Very good.
Okay.
Very good. Hey, thanks a lot. Stay on the line. We'll get your name here and make sure you get a book, okay?
Okay,
thanks. Just stay where you are. Okay, now, so that one's gone. Who scored the very first touchdown in the very first Super Bowl, which would have been, late 60s? Is that when that?
Right. Yeah, and it wasn't 60s. Called the Super Bowl then. It was the AFL-NFL
that's right.
Championship.
Yeah, yeah.
But
let's give a hint. Was it Green Bay and Kansas City? Is that who played?
Yes.
Okay, I knew it was Green Bay and Kansas City. What Major League Baseball mascot has been taken to
court
the most times? And what New York Yankee Hall of Famer was also a vice president for Yoo-Hoo
Chocolate Company?
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to the phones here. Whoops, that person just dropped off. Maybe they realized they didn't have an answer. I don't know. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Do you have an answer for us?
Hi, Dave. I'm going to take a shot on the mascot that's been in court the most.
Okay.
I'm going to say the Cleveland Indians.
No.
Oh, that's...
It's one of the teams in Pennsylvania.
Really?
Darn. All right. Well, thanks.
No,
anyway.
No. Take a guess.
Oh, wait.
Take a guess.
Okay. It's either Pittsburgh or Philadelphia.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Now, don't be a fanatic about this.
I'll go with Philadelphia.
You got it.
He Yay! Was.
Let me give you one of one of his victims claimed that when Philly fanatic jumped onto his lap, it caused him to become impotent.
Oh, that's
and,
bad.
And he went to court.
And he went to court over that, and he was awarded an unspecified amount of money.
Oh, my.
Thank you, ma'am, for
oh,
your
man.
Call.
Hey, stay on the line. We want to get you a book, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Sure, stay there. We'll get your name. Yeah, thank you. Okay, phone number is 283-2525. We have another caller here. We'll get to you in just a second.
The first Super Bowl touchdown should be.
First Super Bowl touchdown. I could probably guess which team it was.
This guy was not a starter, and he could have been. By the way, they named Bart Starr the MVP of the Super Bowl, but this guy was out drinking because he didn't even plan on playing.
Let me write what I think the answer might be down. See if I got it right. I'm not sure. No?
No, he was the guy that got hurt.
Oh,
that brought this one in.
You're amazing, Bob. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. You got an answer for us?
Hi, Dave. No, I guess the other lady guessed it before you got to my call, the Philly Fanatic.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for hanging in there.
Take a shot at the first touchdown of the Super Bowl.
Oh, I have no clue.
Okay. Well, how about a Yankee who's the vice president or was of the Yoo-Hoo Chocolate Company, and skip Babe Ruth. This is way after Babe Ruth's days.
Well, that would have been my guess, was Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
No idea.
That's okay.
No.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Sorry. Thanks.
Sure, thank you.
Bye-bye.
283-2525. Here's another caller. Hi, this is Dave. Do you have an answer for us?
Yes, I do.
Yes, go right ahead.
Max McGee.
Yes, indeed.
Wow.
First touchdown. scored by Max McGee, and we gave away, I believe, 11 out of 12 books.
Wow. Caller, stay on the line. We want to get your name, okay?
So we'll
make sure
thank
you get a book.
Hey,
sure.
Thank you. Have a good week. Yeah,
thanks a lot. I wrote down Boyd Dowler. Was that another name that I dreamed?
He played, and he started the game, became injured. And Vince Lombardi said, Max, you're in the game.
Hmm.
He caught a 35-yard touchdown pass, which was the first touchdown ever scored in the Super Bowl. And
Green Bay, of course, won over Kansas City.
Green Bay won, and there was a case made later that, Bart Starr, the quarterback, but Max McGee very easily could have been the MVP of the game. So,
Bob Tattern, our guest. Bob, give us your website again because people can buy your books there.
Okay, DoubleDribbleBob.com. DoubleDribbleBob.com. And Dave, thank you for this opportunity.
It's fun. It always is. Can we bring you back sometime?
Oh, yeah. You call me, though. Let me know.
Okay. Good to see you again, my friend.
Same. Yeah. Same.
We'll take a break. We're going to be talking a little bit of horse racing. Tomorrow's the day for the Belmont Stakes, and we're going to be talking about them because the Meadows has a big deal whenever they have one of the Triple Crown races. They make a whole day of it for folks going down there. We'll tell you all about it in just a couple of minutes. Stick around. More to come here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We will be right back. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary, and the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. We are speaking today with physical medicine and rehabilitation specialist, Dr. Edward Reedy from Tri Rivers Surgical. Dr. Reedy, what is electrodiagnostic testing?
Electrodiagnostic testing, or also known as EMG testing, is an electrical test of the outside or peripheral nervous system. It involves predominantly disorders of the nerves in your arms or legs. It's used for a variety of conditions, most commonly carpal tunnel syndrome or other pinched nerves in the arms, but also can be very helpful for diagnosing pinched nerves of the spinal axis, either the cervical or lumbar areas. And occasionally for more serious neurologic conditions such as peripheral neuropathy or even Lou Gehrig's disease.
To learn more, call Tri Rivers Surgical at their new office near the Clearview Mall in Butler, toll free 866-874-7483. Welcome back, folks. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. What a treat to talk with Bob Tattern again. Our next guest joins us by telephone. He is Aaron Merriman. Aaron is a harness driver, and they're having a big, big day at the Meadows tomorrow in conjunction with the Belmont Stakes. First of all, let's say hello to our guest, Aaron Merriman. Nice to meet you. Thanks for joining us here today.
Yeah, thank you. I'd love to take the time out of my day to help anybody and, talk about, the track.
How long have you been a harness racetrack driver, Aaron?
Oh, I'm going to say I'm 38. 17 years, I think, now.
Mm-hmm. And do you drive at a variety of tracks all over the Northeast?
Yes, I do. I actually, on a daily basis, I usually race. I start off at the Meadows. I live in Northfield, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I start at the Meadows, which is, of course, in Western Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And I drive most of the cars there, and then I go to Northfield Park, which is my... about a mile from my house to drive at night. So I'm a doubleheader guy each day.
Boy, that's a long day for you, Aaron.
Yes, it's a very long day.
Yeah, plus you're on the road in between. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, I don't get much rest. They say I'm the hardest working guy in the business. actually, I'm on my way to Scioto Downs tonight, which is in Columbus, Ohio.
I see. Well, I understand that the Meadows, because of tomorrow being not only the Meadows will be racing, but it's also the Belmont tomorrow, I guess they're having a full day of activities down there, huh?
Oh, yeah, they do a wonderful job. I think other tracks need to really get on the, on the bandwagon here with them. They're very, very in touch with the fans. They just do an unbelievable job, you know, reaching out and making everybody feel comfortable and enjoy the racing game.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about your career. Do you keep track of, I'm sure you do, keep track of how many times you've won, or is it too many to count?
There's a thing called the USGA, United States Trotting Association. They keep all the stats for you and stuff like that, but actually the last 2 years I've been the winningest driver in North America, which is all of Canada and the U.S., and I am currently on top as we speak by almost 200 wins or more, I believe. I usually don't pay attention to that kind of stuff, but our wonderful announcer, Roger Houston, usually always kind of says, okay, you know, this is win number, whatever, you know, for the year at that track and, you know, what you have for the year and stuff.
Well, you're being a little bit modest. Aren't you going to be honored later this year out in Vegas for your accomplishments?
Yes, I was earlier this year, and now we had a banquet in Florida last year. So, yeah, it's very. It's been a very good, you know, last few years, especially with the competition of that I get to race against. It's very, very high, especially at the Meadows. The winningest driver in the world, you know, all time. You know, this is in history with Dave Pallone, and it's just unbelievable. You know, the camaraderie and the competition that you get to, you know, embrace yourself with every day.
How did you start? Did you grow up on a horse farm, or how did you get interested in this, Aaron?
I definitely didn't grow up on a horse farm. I was as I am now, I'm very much a city boy. You guys, I'm sure, love your Penguins right now. I love my Browns. I know, I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay.
My Cleveland Cavs and my Indians. You know, I grew up as a city boy, but my father raced horses. Uh-huh. He is a first-generation horseman. So he kind of got me not necessarily involved, actually. I didn't really want to do it. You know, I started with the University of Toledo for almost 2 years, and I kind of, like, got the bug to be around the horses there. And I hooked back up with my dad, and, you know, the rest is kind of history. You know, I went to the Raceway Park at Toledo and started my career there, and it's just something I really, really love and enjoy, and I'm really, really glad my father was into it, and my grandmother owned a few horses and uncles, but I never did it, you know, full-time or anything like that, and it's just been a blessing.
Is there an age limit to, do you have to be so old before you're allowed to drive? I know in thoroughbred racing, I'm trying to think of the name of the guy, Steve Cawthon, I think. He was only 16 when he started racing. Are you allowed to start racing that young in harness racing?
Yeah, you can drive it like fairs and qualifiers when you're 16 years old in harness racing, but you cannot get like your farm mutual license till you're 18. Like, so you couldn't you couldn't race at the Meadows until you're 18 years old, you know what I mean? And, of course, you know, went the route and did what you had to do with the model qualifiers and fairs and stuff like that. But, yeah, you can start racing competitively when you're 16, just not at the racetracks.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say your dad is both a driver and a trainer. Do you train horses as well?
No, I do not right now. I have trained, but my schedule is way too rigorous to, have my time to be able to do it. But I love the breed. I love the horse, and that's one of the biggest reasons why I'm in it, you know, and being competitive, I play high school sports and stuff like that, it's something I can kind of keep going, you know. Being that I'm not a professional athlete with, you know, the ball sports, but, you know, I guess, you know, I'm an athlete in this way. But our equine athletes is what make this business, and I love the horses.
Mm-hmm. My next question, probably going to be a pretty stupid one, Aaron, but bear with me. Do you drive the same horse all the time, or does that vary from race to race or day to day, or how's that work?
Yeah, I get that a lot, though. You know, a lot of times, especially when people don't know, do you take them with you? No, I'm a catch driver. So what will happen is I'm usually between 3 and 5 days before the horse races, they're entered into race. There's many times I've entered on multiple horses in one race, and I have to make my pick. So, I'll try to pick the fastest one or the best horse. But usually weekly. Standardbreds are much more durable than thoroughbreds, and they can race weekly. And sometimes horses may race more than once a week at times, I guess, if it's applicable. But they're a very strong breed. But I do race the same horses, like, throughout the year, probably, you know, between 30 and 40 times at times. Mm-hmm. But not the same day, you know what I mean? Like, it's just one time, one horse per race per day. You know, there's usually 15 races at Northfield or 16, and there's 13 at the Meadows. So, and most of the time I'm in about every race at both tracks.
Does a horse
get into about 25 horse races in a day, or 20 to 25.
Does a horse recognize you whenever you are going to drive him? Does he know
who
you
are? I'm sure. Yeah? I'm sure. You know, every driver's different, you know, just like every athlete's different, just like, you know, every baby's different. You know, every horse is different, and every driver, and, you know, we all have our quirks and, you know, ways we make them go, and, you know, they can feel if you're uneasy, or, you know, they're just, they're way smarter than we definitely give them credit for, but I think they definitely know when I'm behind them. Like, I'm very, very aggressive, and, I, you know, I do a lot of talking to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've not been around horses much at all, but I've had people tell me that they are tremendously intelligent, perhaps a lot more than a lot of people would realize, and that you can, you know, you can really develop a relationship, a simpatico with a horse, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, they're like a dog, and I don't know if that, you know, by scientists, you know, in terms of they're smarter or not smarter, but they're very, very, you know, dependent on us humans, just as, you know, they're pets, you know, and you taking care of them like they're children. And you know, there's always that, you know, cliche that horse, they dog food and all that stuff, but these horses are taken care of like I said, they're kids. They're, you know, they're fed three times a day. They're bathed. They're, you know, they really have a pretty good life as a racehorse, you know. And a lot of horses love the competing, too. They like to race. And there's some horses that don't like to race. They're a little bit salty, we'll call them, and stuff like that. But definitely the horses know you, and they definitely know their caretakers and trainers and owners, et cetera. You know, like I said, they live a pretty good life.
And you, likewise, you can probably tell when a horse is a little bit off, you know, maybe a little under the weather or just not, doesn't seem to have the right attitude that day or something. I'm sure you can sense that once in a while.
Yes, for sure, especially when they race, you know. And unfortunately, just like dogs, horses, they can't talk to you. So a lot of times what you're not going to know something until after they jog or train or they race. You know, they're saying, when this horse just went right tonight, you know, he wasn't as aggressive. He wasn't grabbing on as much. You know, he's very lackadaisical. You know, he emptied out during the race. Mm-hmm. Just things like that can kind of tell you, hey, this horse might have a, you know, might have a little minor sickness. And then, of course, after the race, you know, once they're at full, you know, go, whatever, you can scope them after the race and see if, you know, they've got some mucus in their lungs and things like that. You know, and you know, yeah, it's, they kind of let you know. You know, I mean, they're a creature of habit and of packs and stuff like that. So they definitely they definitely tell you what to do.
Now, the horses that will be racing at the Belmont Stakes tomorrow, those are thoroughbred horses. The term for the horses that you drive are, is it standard bred? Is that correct?
Yes, it's standard bred. Like I said, they are different, you know, and they do look a little bit different. You know, their heads are different sizes just a little bit. But like I said, the standard bred breed was, I'm not trying to be a history buff here, but I think it was bred for durability a long, long time ago. And, you know, cowboys and, you know, people using these kinds of horses, bred these horses to, you know, make long journeys and, you know, and stuff like that. Just like the Amish, you know, and Mennonites, that's what horses they use. You know, they use standard breds. They're very, very durable. Their endurance is, you know, it's unsurpassed, you know, for, you know, horse breed-wise. They're very, very tough.
So if we were using an analogy to track and field competition, you might say that thoroughbreds are like a 100-yard dash athletes, whereas a standard bred might be more like a mile runner or something like that, huh?
Yeah, definitely. You know, or the standard breds are the horses that are doing the triathlon. You know what I mean? And then you got the thoroughbreds that are doing that little sprint. You know what I mean? And they're kind of prima donnas. You know what I'm saying? But they're both great. They're both great. There's the way they run, and you know what I mean, and the gait that they have. It's just so tough on them, you know, either way. You know, you know, like the thoroughbreds are just, that's all out on a dead run all the time. And when standard breds, they have a controlled gait to their trotter pace. So, you know what I mean, they can't go at their full potential speed, you know, per se, because they can, I'm sure they can gallop. You know what I mean? It's going to be the fastest, like, out in the wild. So, and that might be part of it, too. You know, that different sorts of injuries go between the two just because of the muscles and, you know, the way to land on their bones.
Here comes stupid question number two, Aaron. Are they bred to be either pacers or trotters, or is that something that you train the horse to do?
Yes, they're definitely bred to be patient with the trotters. There's, you know, pacing studs and trotting studs. But sometimes, you know, because the trot is a horse's natural gait, so you'll have times where, you know, the trot is a natural gait and pacers will want to trot or trotters will want to pace. So sometimes, you know, you'll get it in between or whatever, and just because they're bred that way, you'll have to just put them on the gait that they're most comfortable with. But 99% of the time, they do what they're your breeding set says.
I want to talk a little bit about actual racing, because a lot of our listeners maybe will not be that familiar with it. What about the colors that either a sulky driver wears or a rider wears in a thoroughbred race? Do you always wear the same colors, or do they assign those to you at the beginning of the race? How does that work?
It's, yeah, definitely a difference too. That there are race colors. Ones that the drivers drive in, we those are our colors. We buy them ourselves. We, you know, use them on each horse we drive, everything like that. So as standardbred drivers, jockeys now they switch jackets. You know, I mean, the owner, I think it's usually by owners or stable, and they switch in between races and stuff like that. They do not carry their own colors or, you know, or silks. So it is that is a big difference in between the two. So like. One thing I think it's nice about it, I think that they should try to maybe adopt it a little bit in thoroughbreds. Although I think the owners play such a big role because of the money and the thoroughbreds is, you know what I mean? Like, okay, I can't tell who that jockey is, you know what I mean? Because you've got a lot of guys that are probably 5'4 and 120 pounds. You've got, you know, 10 in a race, mm-hmm. and then they have different silks on, but they're not their own, you know? You know, Mr., you know, Jose Ortiz could wear the same colors as Iron Ortiz, you know, two races ago in a row, and they're brothers, you know, and you're not going to be able to tell the difference. But drivers, you know, okay, guess what? That's Aaron Merriman. We recognize him with Cardinal Red, Gold, and White, and that's him, you know. Or Dave Blown, Red, Black, and White. You know, that's, I think that's kind of, you know, cool. It's like, you know, your jockey, you have to go by the stable name.
So you got to choose your own colors, huh?
Yes, I did. I patented mine right after my father's. They're the exact same. He actually had to sign and say that was okay for me to use his colors, but or you know, and design. So I did it after my father out of respect. And, you know, it's worked out great for me.
I'm looking at your picture. This was from an article actually just a week or so ago in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, an article about you. In the winner's circle, harness racing driver at the Meadows has most wins in the country. That's Aaron Merriman. That's the gentleman that we're talking to. A little bit about the equipment, the clothing that you wear. It almost looks like a protective suit that a race car driver would wear, Aaron.
Well, it might be. That might be their rain cars, which they're very, very hot. Just, you know, rubbery. Uh-huh. You know, just like as each season, there's different kind of colors. You know, summer colors are very, very thin. They're very, very lightweight. They don't protect you from much. We do wear flak jackets. If some guys do, some guys don't. And also riders do. I think they are required to wear them, you know, to protect your rib cages and spine, mm-hmm. Which we should, you know, do it all the time. But I'll be honest, I don't do it all the time. There are times in some states that require it, and I wear it. I'm not afraid to be honest, but I do not wear mine all the time. It's not where it's uncomfortable, but it's not comfortable.
What about,
you know, you got to do some.
You're wearing a helmet here. Is that mandatory?
Yes, definitely helmets are mandatory. And they're very, very, they've grown, you know what I mean, over time. And just like as the NFL, you know, the helmets have changed and to protect your head a little bit more. The insides of them are, you know, much more padded, you know, the old styrofoam stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
And the padding and, you know, of course, whatever the casing is on the helmet.
And obviously you need goggles. I mean, otherwise you'd be getting dust and grit and dirt in your eyes all the time.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of guys wear glasses. You know, there's Walter's glasses that kind of like, you know, use it. But I wear goggles myself. Jockeys actually wear goggles. But, you know, jockeys will wear 5-6 sets a race sometimes. And if it's 5-8, you can't even tell. But they're got their little heads down there, and they're moving goggles on top of their head when their goggles get filled up. So it's kind of cool, actually. How they do that, but I wear goggles. You know, I think it just protects a lot of my, you know, my face and my eyes, and I don't really want stuff to get up underneath or over top the glass when it gets in your eyes. It's very, very, very painful.
Well, you could be pretty dirty and muddy at the end of a race, depending on the conditions, can't you?
Oh yeah. Visibility is very, very tough. Drivers and jockeys the same. It's, you know, when it's raining and it's muddy and the mud's flying and the rain's coming down, visibility can be very tough. And what we would do is we wear these mud screens, or some people put glass, down the end of their nose and, try to block as much of the mud as they can and kind of look over top of it. Everybody's kind of got their own little way of doing things, but definitely can be muddy.
I must be honest with you, Aaron, because I've been to the Meadows on occasion, and I've seen harness racing on TV, and it, the sulky and the position in which you ride, it looks kind of precarious to me. It looks pretty doggone dangerous, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it can be, and that's, like I said, another thing that's great about a horse, harness racing and us being drivers. Everybody sits a little bit different, too, Like, I lean back a little bit. My stirrups are out a little bit further. There's some safety things, I think, that helps if a horse would actually make a mistake and go down or get an accident. You might get catapulted instead of getting drove right into the ground. You know what I mean? You might have a shot of running it out or something like that. But that's the way I'm comfortable. It's just a seat. It's like that you would get on a tractor, in their tractor seats pretty much. And they sit on the race bike there, and you're definitely close to them, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Things happen over in the race, but everybody has their own little way of sitting and being comfortable in the way they hold their lines and stuff like that. Like I said, I'm a guy, I do lean back a little bit, they call it, and it's really, really been successful for me, and that's the way I'm comfortable.
Have you ever been
serious? It's way more comfortable than you think.
Have you ever been seriously injured in a bad spill?
Yes, at the Meadows. It was very, very publicized, I believe, down there, too. It was each of the news stations. I got an accident. It was June 11th, 2010. I broke both my wrists, my elbow, my neck. I had serious brain trauma. My elbow and my right wrist were open compounds. That means, open. They were, the bones were out, and it was very, very gross. To say the least. And it was all from one accident, and I was in the ICU in the Pittsburgh Allegheny Hospital for 8 days near, 7 days or 8 days. I don't even remember about 5 minutes of it. But it was a very, very traumatic experience. I've been in many, many accidents, but I drive a lot of races. They do happen, but knock on wood, they've kind of avoided me, and nothing's been severe. But by far, that was the worst accident I've ever been in, and I was knocked out. I got run over by some horses and drove into the ground. Like I said, it was very, very, very bad.
But after you healed up, it was right back at it, right? I mean, you can't race with fear.
Oh yeah, definitely. You can tell some guys have fear. I don't have any. Especially, I would say to myself, if they sewed me back together there, the surgeries and things like that I had to have, and my elbow was completely shattered. They couldn't even fix it there at the Pittsburgh Allegheny. They flew a woman in from Philadelphia to do my wrist. She said, it was going to be not good. She said, we don't know. They're talking about saving my hand. It was hanging by an inch and a half of skin. My right wrist was.
Wow.
It was completely backwards. It was very, very bad. But I mean, you got to get back up. I mean, if you don't get back up and forget about it, there's no use even getting back out. But the horses know you're scared. They're not going to want to go. And then they're scared, because you've got the bit in their mouth and you're guiding them. They need to have someone confident behind them.
Yeah, and animals can sense that too, no question about it.
Oh, definitely.
Are you able to make friends among the drivers, or do you have to keep a certain distance? I mean, you are competitors after all.
Yes, yeah. That's one reason why I haven't moved, out east or west or wherever. I've kind of stayed in the Midwest my whole life. I really, really enjoy the people that I race against and with. Every once in a while, you're going to have myself or whatever. I don't like to get in disagreements with anybody. I think it's too short, especially after that accident. I was very, very bad before. Like, not at people. I would, if I lost a race, I thought I was supposed to win, I'd throw my helmet and carry on. But now I just kind of take a step back, don't say much, do it that way. But friends, they're your peers. At least 4 days a week, you're racing with the same group of guys. They've got, you golf with them a lot of times. And some of the people, I grew up with, So definitely it's a friendship thing. When you go behind that gate, you could be laughing behind the gate with somebody, talking about something that happened the night before or talking about the calves, although they don't want you talking on the track. Sometimes you do. Once that gate folds, it's on. You know what I mean? Like, everybody wants to win. There is no friends, period.
One final question. You know, to talk about pro football players, oh, he's 32 years old. He's about done. How long can you keep racing? How long can you keep harness racing, Aaron?
I mean, honestly, there's a guy, I mean, Pallone's still winning at a crazy rate. I mean, and he's in his 50s. The length of time for a person's prime in this is, and just like jockeys, can be so long. You know what I mean? You could stay so sharp for, you know what I mean? I think you can get a prime where it's close to 20 years in this. And that's my opinion, you know. You get where you're not seasoned, you're not experienced enough, and then, you know what I mean, once you kind of get a hang of it, you start doing well, you know what I mean, at the top of your game, and you stay at the top of your game until, you know, your senses and reflexes and strength and stuff like that goes away. And us as humans, as you know, we can keep that for a long time, especially, you know, when we're not using, you know, our legs, and we're not getting abused all the time, you know, especially if you're not getting in wrecks all the time and stuff like that. But I don't know how long I'll do it, you know, and there's a guy that, you know, still races, he's 70-something, and I mean, and he does well. He doesn't race as much, you know, Richard Stillings, he's at Meadows, but he's a Hall of Famer. He does an unbelievable job. There's not going to be much of a drop-off between him and me either way. You know what I mean? Like, he handles a horse unbelievable. I mean, he's, you know, gets around, he trains every day, and it's hard to believe, you know, like someone's prime can be that long.
Well, it's a big day coming up tomorrow, folks, at the Meadows, just south of Pittsburgh on I-79, the Meadowlands. It's Belmont Stakes Day. They'll have a full day of racing at the Meadows, and then, of course, you can watch the Belmont there via closed-circuit television and so on. Aaron Merriman, harness racing driver, North American champion, races a lot at the Meadows. Aaron, we really appreciate you chatting with us for a few minutes. It's nice to learn about your life experience and your career and make us able to appreciate the excitement and also the danger of harness racing. Thanks for sharing some time with us today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. It was my pleasure. And like I said, everybody should get out there to the Meadows. Activities and food trucks and stuff like that. I'll be racing out there. I'll be watching everybody having all the fun, believe me. It looks like a great time.
Yeah, big day tomorrow. Thanks again, Aaron. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Nice guy, huh? Yeah. Take a break. Back to wrap up here on the It's Your Turn program after this.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 92-92. The pick 3, 589. The pick 4, 4180. Pick 5, 30301. The wild ball is 0. And your treasure hunt is 5, 7, 9, 22, and 24. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt, $30,000.
Moving from my home of 50 years was a little scary, but I wasn't safe at home anymore, and my daughter with her busy life, children and grandchildren, it wasn't fair for me to expect so much from her.
We looked together to find a new home and discovered New Haven Court at Clearview.
What made the difference were the employees and the residents we met. The residents said it was a great place to live.
New Haven Court at Clearview, a great place to live because it's a great place to work. 888-261-5753 or visit IntegraCare.com.
It seems that almost every day there's news of a breakthrough in healthcare. New medicines and procedures, imaging that opens a new window into the human body. At Butler Health System, interventional radiologist Dr. Thomas Franco understands that even with these breakthroughs, no technology can replace the human side of care.
Every image tells us a story, but there's a bigger picture, and we never lose sight of that. Healthcare is more than practicing medicine. It's about taking the time to understand where every patient is coming from.
For cardiac electrophysiologist Dr. David Schwartzman, that understanding is ultimately the key to better outcomes.
Technology isn't enough. Skill isn't enough. We have all of that. It's about improving the quality of the lives we touch every day.
At Butler, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to. Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
I know of a way to reduce the level of future stress in your life, and I know that it works. One of the most stressful times in our lives is immediately after the death of a loved one, because we have to make so many decisions. The funeral, which casket, which minister, priest, or rabbi, cremation, visitations, church service, or not. All these decisions. Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler suggests that you avoid all these last-minute decisions during that most emotional time by pre-planning. To make all of these decisions now, when you can think clearly and rationally, when you're not burdened by the immediate event. Talk it over soon now with Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Call 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or www.thompson-miller.com. Pre-arrangement. It makes sense. Thompson Miller. Time-honored excellence.
Much thanks to the legendary Bob Tattern for visiting.